If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Before we get to today's show, I wanted to tell you all about the new SoundStream app. It is the new home for all things sound podcast, and now you're able to listen to the perfect blend of music you'd expect from us 24/7. Jam bands and more, much more. New episodes of the podcast arrive at least 3 times a week, and now you can listen to your favorite artists and bands all the time in a perfect music stream. Just hit the play button and away you go. You'll be boogieing in no time. You can make requests, offer shoutouts, and even let us know when your birthday is, all from the SoundStream app. Get the app at thesoundstream.com or in the Apple or Google Play Store. The show starts now. On July 25th, 2020, fans.com will be streaming a historic and timely 16-hour event that will pay tribute to the very rich history of Black American music. Those 16 hours will include an eclectic mix of music throughout the ages, ranging from blues to funk to hip-hop, all with live performances. The event itself is the brainchild of concert promoter and entrepreneur Peter Shapiro and Steve Jordan, the artistic director of the Jazz Foundation of America. In fact, the event is specifically geared to raising awareness of Black American music, and the organizers are hoping to also raise funds for the Jazz Foundation of America's COVID-19 Musicians Emergency Fund. We sat down with Peter Shapiro and Steve Jordan to talk about the event being billed as Red, White, Black, and Blues, and our conversation started when I asked Peter how this project came together so quickly.
Well, I think it's Wednesday, and we're not done yet, actually. we'll still be working on it up into the end, which is cool.
Right.
Yeah. And then probably after we put it together, we'll probably go, oh, we should have done this or that. But that's one nice thing about technology, actually. You know, we've seen what it's done, the pros and cons of it. The impact of technology is so dramatic on everything. Look at our world. You know, it's just crazy what it's doing. But one cool thing is, you know, a few weeks ago, you know, when everything was going down, you know, I just thought of my part. What could I do? You know, everyone's got to do their part, mm-hmm. whatever that is, small, medium, bar, whatever you can do. And my small part was just an idea of let's show people, you know, the impact, the influence, the magic that's happened. From Black music, you know, and with technology, we could put that together quickly and showcase all the amazing music and musicians. And the idea was one song per musician and just going through the history and taking a song with a video and putting it together and arcing it. And it's going to be 16, now 17, 18 hours. But that's going to be a really powerful way to bring it to life, to show the impact and the contribution. I joked to Steve yesterday, I think, or someone, like, you know, the truth is, if you did it with white music, it wouldn't be as good. It wouldn't, you know? And it's just the truth. And I called Steve because we just become recent friends and worked on a project. That's a BB King thing up at the Capitol. And to his credit, when I was like, what do you think of this? You know, he was just like, let's go. So that's what happened. It just happened just a few weeks ago, really. Right, Steve? Like, just, you know, let's do it fast.
Yeah, basically, you know, Pete's describing it correctly. You know, he had an idea and I was totally into it. You know, the fact is that jazz, blues, gospel, you know, are basically the bedrock of the American pop culture as we know it now. And that in turn has been the greatest export that this country has had, you know, not oil, you know, it's been music, and music, of course, as we know, is a universal language. So what this music has brought to the world is undeniable, and it is driving cultures across the globe. So when Pete said, oh, let's try to chronicle some of this stuff, you know, it would have been a different endeavor to do it chronologically and also to try to capture music that we don't have videos for. We're going to have a lot of people that are asking, why is this person not in, and why don't you have something from this artist or whatever? To be clear, Pete's idea was to have live performances. Now that means the criteria for me means capturing live performances as we know them. And that would entail also maybe television performances that have some quote unquote TV tracks, but live vocals that we're allowing. But we have many great artists that there are no live performances on film or video. So consequently, you won't see some of them. So this isn't the tell-all Smithsonian type of chronicling of African-American music as we know it. It's more like with those guidelines involved, you know, having it be live performances that we can find, and also not necessarily the biggest hits or anything of the artist either, you know, but some intriguing performances. And we're also going for performances when the song itself was newly minted, as opposed to the version 35 years later with the PBS pickup band, you know, and that kind of thing, you know. So that's what we're going for. We're going for some really intriguing performances that kind of capture the artist at their peak or in their heyday.
So how do you have, I mean, is it the foundation, the Jazz Foundation of America, that has some of this really old footage? I would imagine that footage of Billie Holiday or Fats Domino or early Miles stuff, that's not easily acquired. Is that stuff that you have in the vault somewhere?
No, well, that's back to the internet. You know, we're doing something where a lot of stuff on you is available in public. And we've been able to go through and you can search now in a way that you couldn't before and find stuff. And then there's some Steve's got, now Steve can talk to it, you know, areas to look for to go in deeper. But it is amazing kind of, and then just how bit if we tried to do this 10 years ago. And the other key is it's a non-commercial, you know, fundraising element. And you couldn't do that. I don't think we could do this just 10 years ago in terms of what you can find online and what's available. Sitting there, you just go in and find it. A lot. It's amazing to me what's there. You know, that's back to the positive of what you can't find today. Back 20, 30 years ago, forget 10, you'd be in a library spending all day to find some of the stuff we find in minutes if you know how to look.
Yeah, I mean, for us, since there's a fundraising element that we're trying to drive people to the Jazz Foundation of America and specifically to the COVID-19 Musicians Emergency Fund, we are using some stuff that's available online, but people, as Pete said, don't really know how to find them or what they're looking for. There are places like Reeling It, you know, companies like Reeling in the Years and Dusted Digital and all these great companies that have great footage. And that's just to name a few. And we're calling through all of them and picking things that we think are important and or fit the guidelines of this thing that we're trying to do. You know, it's like Pete was saying, you know, we're using 16 to 17 hours this could go on for 16, 17 years, you know. So, there's so much out there. But we're just trying to do something just to a quick kind of a Monarch Notes kind of crib notes test, or, you know, for people who don't know the music. And I'll be surprised. A lot of people think, like, for instance, you know, the people who think that the Talking Heads were the first to do Take Me to the River, and they don't know it's a Teeny Hodges song done by Al Green, you know, or that kind of stuff. You know, just stuff like that. You know what I mean? That, you know, besides the fact that it's an amazing record and performance, it's just an educational thing as well. So you have fun, you learn something at the same time, and brings people together.
Did you guys really want to capture, it's obvious that you wanted to capture the history from blues and Muddy Waters or even earlier to modern day stuff, whether it's hip hop or Kamasi Washington or Kendrick Lamar? Is it really important for you guys to tell the whole tale from back in the day to current musicians and their performances right now?
Well, I believe it's very important to acknowledge the back in the day aspect, because without back in the day, you don't have today. So, you know, obviously we know that hip hop is built on a world of samples. What are you sampling from? You're sampling from back in the day. So without that, you don't have the foundation of a whole genre of music. So it's very important to tell that story, even for hip hop artists who don't even really take that into consideration. They don't even they take it for granted. Oh, this is how the music is made. We take a record that was made. Well, you know, there were musicians who actually played that first. You know, they didn't just hit a machine, a drum machine. You know, there was somebody who actually played the drums, bass, guitar, piano, horns, strings, sung, you know, on and on, so on and so forth. So that's an important aspect. And for me, working with the Jazz Foundation of America, and we support musicians who have come upon hard times and these recent times, we're supporting people who, a lot of people who actually played on these records. You know what I mean? We have musicians who actually have played on records that have been sampled over and over and over and over again, who don't get a single dime, okay? Because they're not they don't own the masters, they're not part of the master system. Part of the inadequacies or the inequities, rather, of the music business. You know, how somebody owns the master, so they get the royalty of ownership of a master. You have people who have publishing, so somebody might get publishing on something that they had nothing to do with. They actually had nothing to do with, and they're getting, you know, royalties from. So, and the person who played, I mean, the classic example that happens is for drummers in particular, and of course, you know, that's, you know, close to the heart here, but I mean, a drummer can play a beat that gets sampled over and over again, but since he or she is not the quote unquote composer or co-writer or writer on the tune, they get compensation from the union the one time around. Maybe depending on the usage of it, they may get a small royalty over time, but nothing compared to what the writer gets, who did not probably even come up with the beat, or probably was inspired to get a better recording out of it because of the beat. And then they get paid over and over and over for a sample of a song that they may have written, but the song itself doesn't even really appear in the sample. Okay.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's crazy.
How much of this narrative is going to be part of the stream? Is it only going to be performance videos, or is there going to be an opportunity to share some of this narrative and the through line through all of it?
No, that's another program.
It's just going to be
that's another program, you know.
This is just a Right. This is just live performance, audio visual. You know, we're going to do it Saturday at 9 a.m. on fans. And it's incredibly powerful. Just I've been sitting back and watching, you know, the simplicity of watching songs mold into another song, into another song, into another. And we bounce around. It's not chronological, like Steve said. It's meant to kind of move and flow, you know, from the Dizzy, you know, to an Ella, to Fat Domino, to Alan Toussaint, to Public Enemy.
To Salt and Pepper, you know, exactly. So just when you think you've seen a couple things from a certain era, then you jump to another era, and it's just as powerful because we're taking really, really strong performances. And that means a couple of things for your listener or watcher. That doesn't mean that it's the, like I said earlier in the conversation, not the newest performance of this classic tune, not by any means. It's to capture the stuff when it was at its height. And that means some of the audio is not, you're not going to hear like audio file type audio on some of the clips. It's just not because it wasn't available at the time. But you're going to see and feel a powerful performance, no matter what the audio is, you know, because it's that powerful and that great. And that's the that and that's the thing.
I would imagine things like James Brown at the Apollo or other moments of that epicness are probably are part of this presentation, right?
You got it. Absolutely. In fact, James is going to be the only artist that gets more than one song, because as we, as Pete and I were talking about this morning,
there's also an amazing clip of him in addition to the Apollo. There's a 1971 Italy performance that's just James in prime, and he's James Brown. He's the Godfather. So Steve said he gets he's the only one
with
who comes
two.
In, more than one.
He gets two,
and it's not been easy. You know, this has been hard. I think for Steve particularly, who's leading the kind of curation part, and there's so much, and we're moving fast. This is not meant to be, this is not some you know, thing that we've taken a year to do it exactly this and that, you know. We wanted to move quickly to do it because of partially the timing, and we'll be doing it right up to the end. And it's really cool what you can do. This is something that can is positive from technology, and I and this thing this piece will stand, I think. It'll be a really cool for people to watch for a long time.
You know, I like Pete was saying, when he had the idea, you know, it was to really highlight not only what's happening socially, but also to acknowledge what's happening with the pandemic, because they roll into one another. And this is something, you know, all my years in television, if you were trying to do something like this, you'd be working on it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and you'd have to have a certain, you know, it would be impossible for us to do it this quickly. You know, you have an idea and then you start working on it and you start, and we, you know, there's no big budget about this or anything, you know, or anything like, you know, and it's just basically one place that people can go to see something back to back to back to back that they would have to, you know, spend a very long period of time trying to do themselves, basically, you know, we're doing it for them.
Before we get to the Jazz Foundation of America and the Musicians Emergency Fund, Pete, can you talk a little bit about fans.com and kind of the relaunch of the platform and how, I mean, it really has been every music fan's or one of every music fan's best friends in the last 5 months. Can you talk a bit about fans.com and the kind of programming like this that you're bringing to bear?
I'm a live music guy and I can't do live music right now. You know, I've done a show every night. I may not have been at every show, but I put them on every night for 20 years. And so it's hard for me. So I've started to continue to do what I do, which is put on live music, just do it virtually. And it was cool. The other night we did Billy Strings, and I'll see this, but we actually, the Brooklyn Bowl venue in Nashville was supposed to open March 13th and didn't, we missed it obviously by just a couple of days.
Steve, can you talk a little bit about the Musicians Emergency Fund? Because some of the programs that you're doing are so incredible and helping so many, you know, musicians and families. Proceeds from this event are obviously going to go to that emergency fund. Can you talk a bit about some of the programming and some of the things that are happening there?
Sure. Well, first of all, when you make a donation to the COVID-19 Musicians Emergency Fund, it goes right to clients that need food, you know, money for rent, you know, all types of things, basic necessities. So that's the real thing. That's why this is so timely. Because as we know, because of the poor response from the federal government, this thing isn't going away. It's only going to get worse before it gets better. So for some people, they haven't fallen upon these types of hard times, than people in the real gig economy, as I say. Our clientele are really participants in the real gig economy. I mean, they live from gig to gig. So, for instance, back in March, when the clubs closed, right, that meant that there was no next gig next week for these players, right? That means they don't know how they're going to eat, how they're going to pay the rent, how they're going to pay their phone bills. They also, just as school kids depend on school lunches, school breakfasts, even school late lunches or whatever, they get at least 2 square meals a day at school. Well, musicians, some musicians who play at clubs, they depend on the dinner at the club, you know, that's part of the deal. Sometimes food and drink. So that's gone, right? So these are pressing, urgent needs, not things that can be negotiated by Congress over time. Also, the money that was allotted with the PPP, which was a payroll program, well, these people aren't on payrolls. All right. And then people who were getting checks, well, you got the check through the IRS. I mean, really? Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, forget about it. It's not realistic. Congress did not think about that aspect of the population of the United States. And what's even more troubling and more disheartening is that the people who are left out in the cold, their contribution to our greatest export is completely, it's not acknowledged. All right. Just like, you know, so this is a killer. That in itself is adds on to this pandemic. It's a pandemic upon a pandemic. So we're trying to alleviate some of that pain and pressure that everybody's going through. The amount of money that we are able to gather and give the clients is not nearly enough. We'd like to do more. And that's why I'm very grateful to Pete to giving us this platform so that we can drive people to the foundation and to the work that the foundation does and to the specific fundraising drive, because it's not just for the weekend. This is going to be for a while.
Yeah, it's going to be for a while. And you know, you mentioned that, you know, the gig economy with so many venues closing too, that's got to be, scary too, a scary situation. I read a couple weeks ago, a touring musician was saying that he has to rethink his whole life. He has to rethink being a musician even for the next couple of years, because he may have nowhere to play for the next, you know, 1 or 2 years, given the circumstances of COVID and the fallout from COVID and all of that. I mean, this is really has had a huge impact on the music business. And Pete, you could probably talk to that as well.
And that's a touring musician, okay?
Yeah.
Now, we take care of people, not only touring musicians, but local musicians who don't even tour, okay? We're talking like there are so many levels to the kinds of work that musicians do. So I'm even talking about people that don't even have the opportunity to tour.
Right.
Okay. All right. There's a whole nother world of musicians that don't even tour. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Right.
And then there's the people in the venues who work in the venue. It's just it's a tough situation. We're all got to pivot, you know, just do our best. And that's why you mentioned fans, Ira, like we're just trying to create a place to watch the music and not just music in a living room, but music in venues. If we can start to at least do performances out of venues, even if there's no crowd, but and generate some funds for the artists. We're seeing now people willing to buy tickets to a stream or the tip jar from a stream. And that's going to be a loving and a really important thing that people can do to support the system. I don't know. We're trying our best to think through what I do for my staff, you know, and we thought it was getting better, you know, a few weeks ago. And then we've taken a step back more recently. And I just, you know, every day try to think about what I can do, you know, to survive and make sure these things, these venues are here for tomorrow for the musicians. And that's the only hope I do have, that when it comes back, it'll boomerang hard.
Well, I think that it's going to come back really hard. That's why one of the smart things, you know, besides Pete being empathetic to his staff and the people that he has supported and the family that he's created through working with these venues and doing what he's done over the past 20 some odd years, is that people are going to want the music again. There's something about going to a concert and seeing people live and interacting with other people, and that's really important. So to keep the venues going, no matter what format it is very important. It also speaks to the inept response from the federal government, because Pete has venues in New York and in Nashville and wherever. So look like you're going to be able to open up in New York under the leadership of Governor Cuomo. Things are plateauing and we're on a downward trend, and there have been no deaths lately and all kinds of stuff. Then you can start reopening slowly. But in Nashville, they're falling back, you know, going back. In Tennessee, it's going in the wrong direction. You know what I mean? So You can't even really do a kind of a blanket response to something, because we don't have a federal response
right
to this whole situation. So it's basically, you have to, it unfortunately, it's so quote unquote un-American, but it's almost like every person for themselves. It's like, if you don't, like, nobody should have to tell you to wear a mask, okay? You shouldn't have to be told to wear a mask. But if you're going to be around some idiots that don't want to wear a mask, then we're going to have somebody to say, no, you need to put a mask on. That needs a federal response. I mean, right, not everybody trying to figure out, oh, like this county is okay. And no, because that's not going to get the job done. Everybody's panicking about money. There's no cure. There's no anything. You know that the test results come back too late anyway when you get a test. So what's the best thing? What is the thing that we know actually works? Wearing a mask. Oh, what's so difficult about wearing a mask? I mean, besides the fact that you used to look like you were going to rob somebody when you had a bad time.
Right.
I mean, that's basically it. Why that has become a political issue is beyond me, but it's bordering on treasonous for people to make it a political issue, because basically you're saying you don't really care about the well-being of your fellow citizens. If you don't care about yourself, at least care for someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there are so many different political twists and turns we could take with the current administration and this topic. And I know that, Pete, you're very involved in Headcount. You're the chairman of Headcount. And that certainly the drive for November is on with Headcount. And I don't mean to take away from this discussion, but I mean, Headcount's really important right now, and this discussion is really important, not just because of the impact that it has on musicians, but because it has impact on everybody, right? I mean, it's the politics of the day, unfortunately, and it's come to light because of COVID and Black Lives Matter and police brutality and all of that. But without getting too in depth with politics, I mean, things need to change.
I think it's coming. I think it's coming. The youth, they're experiencing it firsthand. Some, just like we said about the boomerang, you don't realize what you have till it's gone. Steve was playing all the time. I know right before this came, I was doing bouncing around show, boom, show. And it was work and I loved it, but it was work, and I think the fan, it's just human nature. I have kids, you don't realize how much you love that toy. Or how much you love that food or whatever till you don't have it, And, you don't, same as the experience of going to shows when you can't go, it brings it to bear. And the same with now what's going on in the country. And I think people realize, if you don't vote, it has consequences to your life, to you. And people are feeling those consequences.
So every young person that didn't vote in the last election because they were disappointed that Bernie Sanders wasn't the nominee, right? They have to think long and hard about what the consequences were from that inaction, all right? So they can't make that mistake again because they're living with the consequences of that non-action by not voting. Voting turnout was under what it should have been. And you have to think long and hard about the alternative if you do not vote this time around. And you're living with the consequences of what happened from your actions. So with every action, there's a reaction. Okay? So this is what happened. So think about it, deal with it, and don't make that mistake again. That's what we're talking about.
Well, and on the Headcount side, I think hopefully we don't have to pound that in people's heads because they know it, because they're feeling it. I personally think you're going to see the youth vote come out. I know some of the numbers we're seeing. We were all set up to be at every Billie Eilish concert, every Ariana Grande concert this summer, every plus the Green Days or the Dead and Co's or all of it, older, but particularly focused obviously on emerging youth, Camila Cabello, you go down the list, Lizzo. And it was all baked in and set up where we were actually, what we figured out the best way to do it is actually work with the artist and go on tour. We embed volunteer staff with the tour. They're on the bus. They're part of the tour. They get to the gig they set up. We figured out how to do that best and we were doing it and it was all set up. And then, March happened. So we pivoted obviously to digital and just like we talked about with the venues and fans, what I'm doing there, fans like which is trying to be, and on fans, we're not just showing the streams, but we're trying to figure out ways. I mean, we won't do it with Red, White, Black, and Blues, but other streams in Ira, maybe you've seen bringing the fans who are home.
Yeah, I did. I saw on the Dead & Co, not the Dead & Co, sorry, the Fare Thee Well rebroadcast, I think you were showing people chilling and dancing and stuff, which was, by the way, that was the best Sunday I've had in my life in a really long time. So thanks for doing that.
Thank you. Well, yeah, so we don't have a choice but to kind of pivot and do this digital world until we're back. And we've got to do everything we can to get there. We got to make it the best it can be. And Red, White, Black, and Blues is a small part of that. You know, now you can do a 17-hour stream on a Saturday. You know, people are home. And by the way, we got to all be thoughtful about what we're going to do, because this isn't going to disappear tomorrow. So like in the fall and winter, so Steve, we're going to have to come up with more stuff, like, but you can do long form things, longer form. And so that's why, you know, we've done a few things. And Steve, I don't know if we've told you, you know, like all day, 3 day weekend,
yeah,
stream fat, you know, things. And from our past festival and past work, I have all this stuff in the can. And that's one of the things that probably enabled me, it's thoughtful to call Steve with this idea of let's showcase, you know, I'm a live music guy. So Steve, that's why I was like, let's showcase the greatest moments in live music from Black Americans. And let's just take a song each. And it's not going to be 3, 4, 5, 6. That's going to, and we could go, like Steve said, we're holding it back even at 17, 18 hour, whatever it is. And that's just one song. And it's just, and it's incredible how you watch it. And every artist is someone you know. And then there are occasional throwbacks to early people maybe I wasn't as familiar with, but a lot of it you do. And it's like, the songs are incredibly, like Steve said, part of the fabric of our culture, of our music, of America. And so that's what we're going to try and bring out. And I think it'll be a really cool thing, you know, that maybe comes out of a negative thing. You know, it's a cool, you know, that we're all, we have this time to do this kind of stuff. So we better use it positively.
The celebration begins Saturday, July 26th at 9 a.m. at fans.com. Before we leave you guys, and thank you both so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I know that we've gone probably over our allotted time. Steve, can you let people know where they can log in and donate some money to the COVID-19 Musicians Emergency Fund, and sort of how they can go about contributing to the Jazz Foundation of America? Just here, I know it'll be probably rebroadcast as well on the stream, but can you tell people here on the podcast as well where they can send money and how they can do that?
Well, I would urge people to go to our website, which is www.jazzfoundation.org. And so you can see all the many programs that we do, like Jazz in the Schools and the Gig Fund and all, and the calendars for people who are playing that we've set up, you know, during the pandemic. You know, we've been able to set up a couple of kind of things that where people can play and get the tip jar going and all kinds of stuff like that. And if you want to just go and donate directly to the fund, you can go to www.jazzfoundation.org/donate. And then you can just donate directly to the fund. And voila.
Voila. Gentlemen, thanks so much for this stream. It sounds like it's going to be incredible. And thanks for taking the time, guys. Really appreciate it.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Ira.
I don't know about you, but as a music fan, I'm excited for Red, White, Black, and Blues. More to the point, I'm always curious about the history of the music we listen to, a history that is sometimes lost on many of us because of time or interest. Given the current state of affairs, it's important to reflect on the contribution of Black America to the lives we lead today. As we leave you, don't forget to check out jazzfoundation.org and please consider making a donation. Red, White, Black, and Blues will begin airing at 9 a.m. on July 25th at fans.com, and you won't want to miss this great effort from Peter Shapiro and Steve Jordan.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.